You are listening to Walking Home from the ICU. We will be exploring how to save and preserve lives in the ICU. All opinions and views shared are unaffiliated with any organization. Over 20 years ago, research was starting to understand the long-term effects of sedation and immobility. Yet even back then, the cultural cement in critical care had already long dried. Sedation was pulsing through its veins. When the awake and walking ICU was being born, what was it like for seasoned nurses? How was such change introduced? Who embraced it and who rejected it? Patty and Stephanie join us today to share with us what it was like to be part of a cultural revolution.
Today, I'm here with Patty and Stephanie, some of the pillars of our ICU, some of my main mentors. They're going to share with us what it was like how many years ago?
Probably 17 years ago.
Probably. Yeah, when this kind of culture and process started. So Patty and Stephanie, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
So I know, Patty, you started in a shock trauma ICU. Mm-hmm. What was it like back then?
Sedate and really no activity, and had the attendings, nurse practitioners, taking care of all the patients.
And so how did this concept of totally flipping that culture come to pass? Who came and said, let's wake them up and move them? And how did you feel about that?
I do believe from the respiratory unit, the nurse practitioners came up, Polly and Louise, and they were like, we should start moving our patients. And that's how it sort of got implemented. From the old fart nurses, we got a lot of pushback because they didn't want to do that. And I think it comes because of fear, uncertainty, bed settings, yada, yada, yada. But we were able to weed out all those stuff. And then we were able to get them at least to the chair for the first 6 months and then slowly graduate to ambulating.
And how did that feel for you? Like when you first, because you're taking care of patients that weren't moving the whole time.
That's right.
So were you excited about that or did you have some questions?
Well, yeah, totally questions, right? Like really, you really want to try to move the patient with the tube. You worry about the tube. You worry about hemodynamics. We still have the Swan and stuff like that in. Trauma patients, like how much can they do? We had an A-line in the groin. Just different stuff that people were just really worried about, but we did it.
So you started by just getting them to the chair. Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of buy-in by the staff in general?
I would say 50-50.
Okay. And then how did you go from getting to the chair to actually walking on a ventilator?
I think we asked for a physical therapist, I think, and then they would help us mobilize the patient is how it worked out.
So you were doubtful at first.
Totally.
Which is funny for me to hear because I've seen you guys as some of the biggest advocates. I mean, I came as a nurse. I didn't know anything, right? But I saw you guys being so natural, so comfortable with it that it's hard for me to imagine you ever being obstinate or doubtful about it. So how did that change for you? What changed your perspective in your practice?
I would say they got off the vent much quicker. They were able to still keep their muscle strength, right, to be able to breathe and move. So that was really good to see, I think. I don't know what else, but...
Stephanie, you're one of the...
Yeah, well,
what do you think,
my Stephanie? Perspective is much different because working in med-surg ICU, when we get the patients from shock trauma and they had been sedated, it seems like when they took out the sedation, they sent them to us and we got to deal with the delirium.
Oh, okay.
And it was a lot of agitation and lots of sitter patients and trying to keep them in bed. And yeah, it was difficult. It was physically exhausting.
Yeah, way more work when they're delirious.
Way more work. Mm-hmm. Way more work. Yeah.
So then when, yeah.
Yeah, so at that point, I mean, it was a lot more physical therapy. Let's try to get them up. Let's try to get them tired so they'll maybe get some rest.
And not wear you out.
And that, yes, that wore us out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a different aspect too.
Totally. It was a totally different.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
I just had a friend text me. He wants to incorporate this kind of culture into his ICU. And so he texted me, he said, I'm trying to wean the sedation off this patient, but they're really agitated. What do I do? I said, get him up. Mm-hmm. And I said, but he's agitated. I said, but get him up. Yeah. And so he did. He had no support, like no one would help him walk the patient. So he just took steps with him, and the patient had just been there for a little while, but it wore him out so much that he slept all night. And he's like, I can't believe that worked. I never would have thought of just moving the patient being the treatment for anxiety, but his night was, as a nurse, was better because.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we found that to be true as well. If the more agitated they got, it was like, okay, it's time to get him up. Let's get him walking, moving if we can. And up in the chair and wear them out.
And so now,
and then if they would rest and sleep, their brain would start functioning better.
And you had a better day the next day.
And a better day the next day.
And so after seeing what it was like to have people sedated and immobile and then to have see all the crazy delirium from all that, how does that play into your practice now that you're getting people from day one? What does that do for your practice and how you approach managing patients on the ventilator?
To get them up. I think that's really helpful. Yeah. I think because the day and night sort of gets confusing, right? So we try to have that day and night routine, see what they could do because they're not coming in obtunded. They're coming in walking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and as minimal sedation as possible to keep their brain functioning clearly and so they can interact.
Mm-hmm. And well, how do you see patients? I know that, you know, you guys have done this for so many years. 12-hour shifts are long, but what do you see when you're managing patients as far as what is your vision for them? Because I hear you guys talk about things, and I hear you talk about weeks from now, and I'm always amazed. Why not just get through your shift and do what is convenient for now? What do you see for those patients?
I see them getting better if they can move, so... right?
Well, Patty,
that's what I see them do, right? Like, so my thing is basically get in there. I don't care how much support they're on, get them up on the side of the chair. That's the first thing I would do. I would assess them and get them up in a chair. If I have to tie them down, restrain them, that's fine. And then have the sitter help me for sure. And then keep doing that. And then in the afternoon, when you get them up much stronger, they're able to do more stuff too in the afternoon. So if you calculate all the days that you keep doing that, day and night and evening, they're going to be able to keep their strength.
Right. You don't put it off. So you come in with someone that's maybe a little shocky or a lot shocky.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really bad respiratory failure. Yeah. You do whatever they're capable of in that moment, I think there's such an inclination to wait till later, right?
Yeah.
We're going to just treat the infection now and then get them up later. But from your experience, what does that do?
Just prolongs being intubated.
Yeah.
And your weakness continues, right? Your weakness continues.
Think back. I mean, it was scary thinking, you want me to get this patient up and they're on pressors. And I mean, it was frightening.
Yeah.
And now I don't even think twice. It's like, well, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not whipping people that are armor crawling blue on the ground.
Right.
That is correct. But you have to make a common sense decision, right? If they sit up and they're dropping their pressures and they're on multiple pressors, well, we try again in a couple of hours.
Right.
Maybe they'll be better, you know?
Yeah, so
you
take have to it just, slow.
Yeah.
See what they can tolerate.
Yeah. I think even sitting up, they're holding their own heads up, and that's going to help them get extubated later, swallow later, all the things.
But work their core.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when we get patients from other facilities that have been down for weeks or more, what is that like? Like, Patty, you just took care of a guy that was prone for 8 days with mm-hmm. COVID-19, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So when you first got him up, what was that like? Oh, that was just 8 days.
Yeah, so I slowly titrated that sedation down to see where he's comfortable, but he couldn't even hold his head up. He couldn't even sit up. He was flimsy all over, like nothing. He was just like jello.
Did that scare you?
No, I just knew he was weak because he was sedated.
And I think everyone's really afraid of falls, this big liability about falls. So how did you, what gave you the courage to get
no, because we have our physical therapist, and then I had another nurse helping us out. So one, you know, held his head up so we could support his head, and then the other held his back, and we just sat there for 15 minutes with him. I mean, that's all he was able to do after those 8 days of straight shot sedation.
Which I think mobilizing patients isn't a general ICU skill, because when you just trach and peg them and send them to LTAC,
mm-hmm.
you never developed that skill of moving an adult-sized newborn, right? But you, as a teen, you guys were comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And
that's the key word, isn't it? Team.
Yeah. I think what I hear from the PT world sometimes is they don't feel very much support from the nurses. Right. The nurses will even put up excuses of, well, the patient didn't sleep well that night, or they're tired right now, or they're, you know, we're busy.
They're lazy, right?
Right, but I see you guys already have. I didn't say that.
But you guys, lazy.
But physical therapy comes in, and a lot of times you guys already have your patients up in a chair,
yep,
writing on a board saying, I'm ready to walk, where's PT? Right. So how do you see your relationship with physical therapy?
Pretty positive. I mean, we very rely positive on help. Yeah. You know, they're very helpful. They're like, hey, do you want me to take them to the bathroom for you? Whatever. They're part of our team.
Yeah, they're invested as much as mm-hmm. we are. And also the respiratory therapists.
Oh, yeah.
Are amazing.
Yeah.
And how's that?
It takes a lot of time for them to come in and help us walk people on the vents. And
how do you coordinate that with the respiratory therapist? As far as like when you come on, you see, okay, we've got mm-hmm. 7 vented patients and they're all going to walk. So who does that when? How do you coordinate that as a charge nurse?
Physical therapy does, right?
It's between the bedside nurse and respiratory and PT.
They coordinate and make a plan. They all find a time that works for them.
That's right.
It's just amazing. With so much going on, it always happens. I mean, these patients walk 3 times a day. Do you ever feel like that's excessive for your patients?
No.
I did at first. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How did you find time for it?
In between 10 and 12 o'clock. Right? Well, but there's downtime when we don't have to give meds. I think that's a good time to do it after you do your 10 o'clock vitals and boom, you conquer your activity.
Oh, I like that. So there's kind of an ingrained
yes.
timeline.
Yes.
Same thing in the afternoon.
Yes.
Things are usually a little more calmed down around doing rounds at that point.
After two o'clock, right? I think is good. And then we sit them up until, yeah.
And in the evening, we don't have a physical therapist and yet the team still does it. They still get them up.
They still do it.
Yeah. They're as passionate as anybody.
And I just think it ends up being safer when you've done it from day one because you don't have to combat this severe weakness. Patients are already walking, oftentimes without a walker or anything. Mm-hmm. So there's not a huge fall risk. It's just getting that stupid ventilator and the oxygen ready and having
someone to hold your pumps and everything else and chest tubes
and
yeah,
and vacuums and all the things. But yeah. No, that's pretty amazing. And how do you teach other nurses to do it? Or what do you do when other nurses come and they have a totally different background and culture.
Watch and learn. They have no other choice, right?
Welcome to the world.
That's right. Watch and learn, and you're doing it. And I think they feel comfortable. Like, once they see us mm-hmm. making adjustments easy, like putting the tube somewhere else that the patients are not going to pull,
right.
I think they just see that done. It's easily doable. So,
yeah, they see PT coming in. They see the tech coming in to help. They see everyone just taking their place and...
It is a magical orchestration. Like I remember, mm-hmm. I mean, I was a brand new nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea, but everyone just kind of carried me through it and said, but it was, welcome to the unit. This is what we do.
Yeah, no choice.
Jump in. Yeah.
Please hold the tube. I don't care what you do.
And how's that impacted your career as far as fulfillment in your career?
Oh, it's very rewarding, mm-hmm. extremely rewarding to think of how many people do not have to go to a care facility and can actually go home mm-hmm. and be functional. It just boggles the mind sometimes.
Especially through such long and productive careers as yours, how many people have you not just like maintained a heartbeat or got their lungs better, but you preserved their functionality, their humanity,
mm-hmm.
because you let them be awake and be human and moving while here.
Yep.
What other pearls of wisdom would you share with the RICU community?
I don't know, except move them, get them up and moving. Like that COVID patient walked out of here,
which is pretty impressive
being in, you know, the hospital, something like that. So, yeah, it's better to be active and be proactive for your patients because they're not going to be able to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
And you don't want them to lose their strength.
Well, you're kind of a tough love, Patty. I mean, you get the patients that are obstinate and don't want to move because we know that you get them one way or another to get going. But
I don't know why I get them.
But that's why, because you come in and you're like, here's how it's going to go.
Right, Steph?
But you both do it so lovingly that patients trust you. They're willing to do it. They see the confidence and the vision that you have.
And there are those patients that are so frightened
uh-huh.
oh, I'm going to fall. And if you just take it slow and easy, and our physical therapists are amazing at talking them through everything.
Yeah, that's true. But I hear you. I mean, you have such a nurturing voice. You just come in and you're like, here's what we're going to do. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. but you do amazing work and you change so many lives and giving people their true lives back. So thanks for all you do and for teaching our team and preserving our culture throughout all these years.
Well, thanks for all you do.
Yeah, thanks for all you do too.
Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
If you want to join in on the conversation, leave a voicemail at 801-784-0472. Or reach out to me on Twitter.